Happy Thursday, everyone. It's Friday Eve. It's always, Thursday might be my favorite day of the week only because I'm anticipating for Friday. Tomorrow's like, you know, all right, it's Friday. It's the end of the week, end of the work week. School's out. I think the kids are off from school next week for President's Week or spring, winter break, whatever you want to call it, winter break. I'm in New York. It was 67 degrees today on Long Island. It's supposed to be 30. I don't know what's going on. Tomorrow is supposed to be like 54 and 28 degrees at night. It's not making sense. I don't know if we're warming, freezing, or we're all just going to die from vinyl chloride poisoning and whatever else they throw at us. Anyway, hope you're all doing well. If you're watching on Facebook, please hit the share button. You should be, at this point, you should have a Rumble account. You should be logged into Rumble, and you should be watching me on Rumble Live and in the live chat at 1776live.tv. YouTube sucks. Not allowed on YouTube. Rumble is where it's at. You should be on Rumble. Also on Getter. Live on Getter, live on the Patriot Podcast Network on Roku TV. Something interesting about Rumble. If you have Roku, you have a Roku TV, Roku device, you can download the Rumble app on Roku, and you can watch Rumble right on your TV in your living room. You can't interact with the live chats. So you don't need an account. You can find anything you want with the search button. And Rumble is now fully operational on Roku TV as well. I found that out a couple weeks ago directly from Rumble and thought that was pretty cool. So we got a lot going on. Today, finally, Joe Biden finally comments on the shooting down of these unidentified flying objects, balloons, whatever you want to call them. To be honest, and from what it seems to me, is they don't even know what it is they shot down, but they shot them down. He made some comments today, and I'm going to play them. It's about 8 minutes. Joe Biden also went, I believe it was today, yesterday or this morning, went and got his annual physical. Basically needed to get a physical ahead of his possible announcement to run for re-election in 2024. He's 80 years old. We've seen this guy for the past 2 years bumble, space out, walk in different directions, shake hands with invisible people, wave it over here, and sniff countless children, amongst other things, and walk in weird directions. Secret Service is like, oh, over here, sir, and he's walking off into the bushes. I mean, this guy is not with it. You have the wet nurse, Dr. Jill, you know, with him, directing him. You have Easter bunnies chasing him down and trying to get him away from reporters. You have handlers getting him away from reporters. He can't be trusted to talk to anybody on his own because we have a senile president. But apparently passed his physical with flying colors. Anyway, I want you to hear, and I'm going to bring this up. I want to start with this and get it out of the way because I also want to talk about the media that was allowed to participate in this briefing, and the members of the media that not only were told they weren't allowed to be in there when asked to removed, but even one where the Secret Service told him he couldn't be in there and he's in there every day. Very interesting how they want to control who can hear and who can have access to these briefings, who have access to the press briefing room every day to listen to KJP live behind the podium. It's quite interesting, but is it really? Are we surprised? I don't, at this point, nothing surprises me, but he did make the comments finally on shooting down these balloons, objects, whatever you want to call them. I want you to pay attention. I know it's hard to hear this guy talk, but it's important, especially the end is very interesting. The guy is off the reservation. He's a nasty, senile old man. The guy that yells at the kids for being on his lawn. This is who we're dealing with, especially when he deals with reporters. and we've heard him in the past yell at reporters. Ducey, you know, he called them a stupid son of a bitch and all kinds of other things. He's out of his mind. He's not with it. He could barely read the teleprompter. And literally, they may end up running this guy again for president. I don't know how they're going to. I can't see it. Some people are speculating he's going to resign. I have my doubts. I don't think they're going to have him resign. The Democratic Party's in shambles. They don't know which direction they're going in. People are, you know, Republicans are throwing their hat in the ring and they're over here with this dumpster fire and not knowing what to do. And is the last Hail Mary move is to have Big Mike, Michelle Obama come in and run for president and get the Democratic nomination. I mean, that's like the ultimate Hail Mary for the Democratic Party, in my opinion. But and a lot of other people feel that way, too. Anyway, let's and I really want you to and even comment. All the chats are open, by the way. All the chats are open wherever you're watching. And tell me if this is a guy, the commander in chief. He's not commanding anything. Is of mind and body, mind, sound, is he with it? Because the way he's reading, none of it makes sense. And of course, this guy's just being programmed to say certain things. So let's listen to this idiot.
Last week, in the immediate aftermath of the incursion by China's high altitude balloon, our military, through the North American Aerospace Defense Command, so-called NORAD, closely scrutinized our airspace, including enhancing our radar to pick up more slow-moving objects above our country, around the world. In doing so, they tracked three unidentified objects, one in Alaska, Canada, and over Lake Huron in the Midwest. They acted in accordance with established parameters for determining how to deal with unidentified aerial objects in U.S. airspace. At their recommendation, I gave the order to take down these three objects due to hazards to civilian commercial air traffic and because we could not rule out the surveillance risk of sensitive facilities. We acted in consultation with the Canadian government. I spoke personally with Prime Minister Trudeau and from Canada on Saturday. And just as critically, we acted out of an abundance of caution and an opportunity that allowed us to take down these objects safely.
That they couldn't identify what they were.
And the Canadian military are seeking to recover the debris so we can learn more about these three objects. Our intelligence community is still assessing all three incidences. They're reporting to me daily and will continue their urgent efforts to do so, and I will communicate that to the Congress.
So the debris is not recovered yet.
We don't know exactly what these three objects were. But nothing right now suggests they were related to China's spy balloon program.
How do we know that?
They were surveillance vehicles from any other country.
How do we know that?
The intelligence community's current assessment is that these three objects were most likely balloons tied to private companies, recreation, or research institutions.
So we had the U.S. military shoot them down.
Conducting other scientific research. When I came into office, I instructed our intelligence community to take a broad look at the phenomenon of unidentified aerial objects. We know that a range of entities, including countries, companies, and research organizations, operate objects at altitudes for purposes that are not nefarious, including legitimate scientific research. I want to be clear. We don't have any evidence that there has been a sudden increase in the number of objects in the sky. We're now just seeing more of them, partially because the steps we've taken to increase our radars, to narrow our radars. And we have to keep adapting our approach to dealing with these challenges. That's why I've directed my team to come back to me with sharper rules for how we will deal with these unidentified objects moving forward, distinguishing between those that are likely to pose safety and security risks that necessitate action and those that do not. But make no mistake, if any object presents a threat to the safety and security of the American people, I will take it down. I'll be sharing with Congress these classified policy parameters when they're completed. And they'll remain classified so we don't give our roadmap to our enemies to try to evade our defenses. Going forward, these parameters will guide what actions we'll take while responding to unmanned and unidentified aerial objects. We're going to keep adapting them as the challenges evolve, if it evolves. In addition, I've directed my national security advisor to lead a government-wide effort to make sure we are positioned to deal safely and effectively with the objects in our airspace. First, we will establish a better inventory of unmanned airborne objects in space above the United States airspace and make sure that inventory is accessible and up to date. Second, we'll implement further measures to improve our capacity to detect unmanned objects in our airspace. Third, will update the rules and regulations for launching and maintaining unmanned objects in the skies above the United States of America. And fourth, my Secretary of State will lead an effort to help establish a common global norms in this largely unregulated space. These steps will lead to safer and more secure skies for our air travelers, our military, our scientists, and for people on the ground as well. That's my job as your president, commander in chief. As the events of the previous days have shown, we'll always act to protect the interest of the American people and the security of the American people.
Well, that's BS.
Since I came to office, we've developed the ability to identify, track, and study high-altitude surveillance balloons connected with the Chinese military. When one of these high-altitude surveillance
balloons we've never been able to do that before, ever?
Over the continental United States earlier in the month, I gave the order to shoot it down as soon as it would be safe to do so. The military advised against shooting it down over land because of the sheer size of it. It was the size of multiple school buses and posed a risk to people on the ground if it was shot down where people lived. Instead, we tracked it closely, we analyzed its capabilities, and we learned more about how it operates. And because we knew its path, we were able to protect sensitive sites against collection. We waited until it was safely over water, which would not only protect civilians, but also enable us to recover substantial components for further analytics. And then we shot it down, sending a clear message. The violation of our sovereignty is unacceptable. We'll act to protect our country, and we did. Now, this past Friday, we put restrictions on 6 firms that directly support the People's Republic Liberation Army, the People's Liberation Army Aerospace Program, that includes airships and balloons, denying them access to U.S. technology. We briefed our diplomatic partners and our allies around the world, and we know about China's program and where their balloons have flown. Some of them have also raised their concerns directly with China. Our exports have lifted components of the Chinese balloon's payload off the ocean floor. We're analyzing them as I speak, and what we learn will strengthen our capabilities. Now, we'll also continue to engage with China, as we have throughout the past 2 weeks. As I've said since the beginning of my administration, we seek competition, not conflict with China.
China seeks domination, not competition. Cold War.
But I make no apologies, and we will compete. And we'll be responsibly
now
manage
with him
that
at the
competition
helm.
So that it doesn't veer into conflict. This episode underscores the importance of maintaining open lines of communication between our diplomats and our military professionals. Our diplomats will be engaging further, and I will remain in communication with President Xi. I'm grateful for the work of the last several weeks of our intelligence, diplomatic, and military professionals who have proved once again to be the most capable in the world. And I want to thank you all. Now, look, the other thing I want to point out is that we are going to keep our allies and the Congress contemporaneously informed of all we know and all we learn. And I expect to be speaking with President Xi, and I hope we're going to get to the bottom of this. But I make no apologies for taking down that balloon. Thank you very much.
Walking away.
Sir, the question was it? There's been criticism that this. Sir, Mr. President, there's been criticism.
He got called out. Look at him.
Mr. President, there has been criticism that this was an overreaction that was done because of political pressure.
Okay. You come to my office and ask the question. We have more polite people.
Mr. President, why have you chosen Poland for your trip to mark anniversary of the war? And what's your message? What?
He laughs and walks away. He laughs and he walks away. This is what he does. He laughs and walks away. I mean, what is the media's job? And obviously we know that the mainstream media lies and things like that. But I mean, in general, what is the media's job? The free press of America is to report to the American people. How is the media in this situation and so many others supposed to be able to report to the American people when, one, He walks away, laughs at them. One reporter called him out and asked if he was compromised because of his family's business dealings with China. And that's when he turned around and said, come on, give me a break. Come on, man, give me a break. Like, he's above everybody. He has this look on his face like everybody's peasants. He doesn't have to answer to anybody. He's got to answer to us, the American people. And unfortunately, you know, most of the ways we're going to know what's going on is from our American press. When, and that's whatever outlet you want to watch or listen to, whether it's mainstream media or decentralized media, whatever it is. But the bottom line is he walks away. And someone wanted to ask him a simple question about where the one-year anniversary of the war and why he picked Poland. And he laughed and he turned his back. This is what they do to the American people. They hate us. The Uniparty hates us. The Democrats hate us. The Rhinos hate us. Like, who's here for us? But it gets worse. Before this briefing today, okay, there were actual members of the press who are in the White House press briefing room every single day listening to KJP and all of the BS lies she tells at the podium. And some of them were barred from attending and asked to leave. And then given some ridiculous excuse that they had to be pre-credentialed to be at this briefing because Biden would be there. And this is the, and that they must comply. They must comply. You know that word, you must comply? We've heard that for how long now? So I had him on the show a couple weeks ago. Okay. Simon Atiba, African journalist with Today News Africa, who tries to ask some very tough questions. He came to this country thinking that all Republicans were racist, and he now publicly says, boy, was he wrong. And he sees what's going on, and he's in the White House press briefing room every day, and every day KJP does not call on him. Every once in a while, you hear him yelling, and he can get a question in, and everybody kind of, you know, you'll hear him, he's African accent. I think Simon Atiba has more integrity, more journalistic integrity, because if you go on his Twitter, he reports it as he sees it, as it's coming out. He's not taking sides. He's not right-leaning. He's not left-leaning. It's like he knows what's bullshit and what's not, and he's reporting. And he has more journalistic integrity than I think every reporter that goes to that White House press briefing room every single day. Anyway, he put out a tweet today. I'm going to pull it up. And if you don't recognize him, there he is. Simon Atiba, who's on my show. I messaged with him today. I think he was going somewhere to Florida to do an interview about his experience today. I'm hoping maybe to get him back on the show next week or so to talk about this and things that are going on in general. He puts out this tweet and he says, the White House called the Secret Service on me. The White House is in such panic that having me in a press briefing with President Joe Biden is scary. Today, they allowed virtually everyone in and stopped me at the entrance where Biden is finally delivering a speech on Chinese spy balloons and other identified flying objects. There were about 50 people in front of me. They let them all in and asked the Secret Service to keep me at the entrance. He must stay here, one junior White House official told the Secret Service agent. And the Secret Service agent told me, sir, we want you to stay there. So I believe as a network flies me to Florida to tell my story to the American people, I can say categorically that press freedom is an illusion, even here at the White House. And it's a shame. And he truly worries for America because this is what they did to him. They had Secret Service stop him at the entrance. He's in there every day. KJP told him he would not, that she would not meet with him until 2024. I mean, he's credentialed. He's there. He's the chief White House correspondent of Today News Africa. And he's very interested in reporting on the news and the ties between Africa and America and what China is doing in Africa. I want to have him on the show and just and talk to him about what China is doing in Africa as far as mining all of the precious minerals and things like that. There's so much going on. So Simon Atiba was not the only one who was barred from it. Diana Gleb, I'm sorry, I sorry, I messed up your name, Diana. Diana Glebova, she is from the Daily Caller, and today, even she was asked to leave as well. She says, White House demands media comply and haul specific reporters out of Biden's UFO brief today. The White House controlled which reporters had access to Biden's remarks on UFOs, telling the media to comply and asking specific reporters, including the Daily Caller, to leave. They apparently had to be all pre-credentialed due to space limitations, but there was enough room for everyone. They had like 20 so empty seats, apparently. And it was pointed out by someone else who was asked to leave. Stephen Nelson of the New York Post was asked to leave. And also, Ryan Schmelz, I always get his last name wrong. Ryan Schmelz of Fox News Radio. He was asked to leave as well. Biden's staff literally went around the room and asked every reporter to present their pre-credentialed pass. But people didn't really know how to get this pre-credentialed pass. They were already credentialed to be everyday White House correspondents. And they said which about five people, including Diana Glebova from the Daily Caller, Steve Nelson from the New York Post, Simon Atiba from Today News Africa, and Ryan Schmelz from Fox News Radio, to leave. They were told they had to comply. And Steve Nelson from the New York Times resisted Joe Biden's staff and pointed out that there was enough room for everybody. And there was a bunch of empty seats on both sides, they said. And apparently, they've been asking the White House to determine who gets access to a pre-credentialed pass, and they never answered them. This was a they have this pre-credentialed pass, so that it gives them the option to block certain reporters from certain outlets. And this was back in June, a letter signed by 70 reporters demanding answers on how to get pre-credentialed for certain things, if that's what they were going to do. You know, remember when this administration said that they were going to bring transparency back to the press briefing room? I'm sorry, but Donald Trump was in that press briefing room all the time with whatever press secretary he had at the time, because he had a few. He was in there all the time speaking to people. Nobody was pre-credentialed because the president, was coming. This is all a scam to control the narrative, because they know people from these outlets are going to somehow try to ask a question and put Joe Biden on the spot, and they don't want that. They didn't want him answering any questions. His handlers told him, make your comments, walk away. But he turned around and he engaged. He barely engaged until he told one guy to give him a break and then smile, laughed at everybody, and he left. This is what's happening to media now. They're not allowed to report on what's coming out of the White House. Secret Service is telling them to leave. They're being removed and told to comply. And this is happening everywhere. Tomorrow, James and I on Freedom Friday are going to do a deep dive in Ohio. A lot of stuff going on in East Palestine, Ohio. Videos of reporters getting taken down by law enforcement and dragged out of press conferences where the governor is speaking. All sorts of crazy stuff going on down there. They're blaming Donald Trump. We're going to get into all that tomorrow. Tomorrow, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, Freedom Friday, right here. Make sure you tune in, because me and James are going ham on East Palestine, Ohio. And I have so much stuff I've been looking at today that I want to get out, because there's so much information all over the place. I want to put all the important stuff together and the key parts that the left is trying to say about Donald Trump. And we have Pete Buttigieg, and there's just so much going on. And I want to go through it all tomorrow. So tomorrow is going to be a big show, probably going to be a long one, probably a 3-hour banger. And we're going to be talking mostly about that and all of the layers that's happening. So again, I wanted to just, listening to Joe Biden, we saw he's just out of it. He's completely out of it. He's reading off a teleprompter. The guy went for a physical and the memo came back that he's fit to serve. He's great. Tip top shape, Joe Biden. Not senile, no dementia. That doctor should be fired, should be stripped of medical licenses, and everyone else that gives that opinion about this guy. So It's pretty sad. And we have media outlets that are not allowed to report on what's going on. The New York Post, the Daily Caller, Fox News Radio, Today News Africa, all told to leave. And Simon Atiba, African reporter, chief White House correspondent, credentialed to be there every day, actually stopped by the Secret Service and said he has to stay here. Why? Because he's African? Because he's black? Or because KJP is threatened by him because he actually asks a lot of decent questions, origins of COVID, and other things that reporters don't want to ask, but he wants to ask because he wants to know. That's quite interesting. If you're on Facebook, please hit the share button. And if you're on Rumble, the chat's open. Make sure you hit the follow on Rumble. Rumble's slow going. YouTube sucks, like I said. If you don't have a Rumble account, you should have a Rumble account. You should do away with YouTube. It's free. You can see all kinds of shows, especially mine. I can't be on YouTube. I was thrown off. So it's and when I try to go back on, they just hit me and strike me and everything else. All right. House Oversight Committee. James Comer, Republican congressman out of Kentucky. He's a hard-hitting guy. I like him. He is the House Oversight Committee chair, and he has his sights on Biden family members in his next step of the Biden business probe. And I like their take on this because they changed the narrative a little bit where, you know, before the election, it's we have to investigate Hunter Biden, and Hunter Biden is not a government employee. He's not a politician. You know, unfortunately, when somebody from the left, some idiot says, well, it doesn't matter what Hunter Biden does because he was never a government employee and he was never a politician. You have to agree with them. Yeah. But all of the business doings was he was the vessel for his father, who was vice president and now president. And we know, you know, there was so much influence peddling, and that's what they're trying to get down to the bottom of. And the Democrats, they've complained about influence peddling forever. So now all of a sudden, the House Republicans want to look into it with the Biden family, and it's all, oh, we can't do this. It's not right. It's a political smear job and blah, blah, blah. They don't like hearing that word political smear job when they're actually doing it to a Republican, like about the Russia hoax, what they did to Donald Trump and General Flynn and Roger Stone and George Papadopoulos and all that, all those smears. They don't want to talk about that when that was all proven to be lies, lying so much that they actually got fabricated enough where they got convictions out of corrupt DC juries and judges for some of these people. It's ridiculous. But now that we're talking about the Biden crime family, we don't want to talk about it. So the House Oversight Committee, James Comer, he said on Tuesday that the next step in the committee's probe into the Biden family business is to issue subpoenas to Hunter and James Biden, the brother of Joe Biden, who apparently now is being exposed for, he was hired to do some sort of secret $140 million deal with the Saudis while Joe was vice president. I had to look into that a little bit. He wants to issue subpoenas to Hunter and James Biden if they fail to provide requested documents and communications relevant to this ongoing investigation of the family for everything from tax evasion, wire fraud, and money laundering, which will ultimately probably lead to other things to prove influence peddling, pay to play. Now, James Biden, the brother of Hunter Biden, apparently did not respond to the Oversight Committee's letter for certain communications and documents that they sent out on February 7th. And Hunter and his lawyers, they denied the demand for the information, stating that there was no legitimate oversight or legislative purpose to compel them to give them any of this information. Because again, they're playing the card as Hunter Biden is a private citizen. Why should he have to give anything to Congress? When you think about it, I guess they're right in a way, and I'm not an attorney, but Congress should not be able to go after private citizens. I mean, that's that's me anyway. Whatever. But apparently they said the next step comes subpoenas, and they will use a subpoena power. And they also said for the subpoenas to win in court, they have to give them every opportunity to supply the information to Congress that they demanded. And basically saying that the ball is in their court. The ball is in Hunter Biden's court and James Biden's court. Now, The Oversight Committee says that the investigation into the Biden family is legitimate and it has a legislative purpose because of the avenues that it went with the business dealings and how it involves Joe Biden, who was the sitting vice president. Who knows what happens when he was a senator? I mean, the guy's been in politics for 865 years. So Hunter Biden's, you know, high paid attorneys are trying to fight that, obviously. And like I said, we know that the Democrats have been complaining about influence peddling, and we know that the Biden family has been absolutely, obviously influence peddling. I mean, look at the artwork stuff. How come the art dealer refuses to give up the people who bought the art, refuses to comply with the investigation and says, no, we're not giving you anything? It's odd for art. So the Oversight Committee, obviously, they're saying they want to make stricter ethics laws, which I think we need all across the board everywhere, because there's really no ethics at all in politics at every level, if you really want to break it down. But they, you know, when you have family members of politicians doing business overseas, that tends to be a problem, too, especially when your father is either a sitting senator or vice president or commander in chief. So they need to figure out what these laws need to be. But we also need to look into the corruption. We need to look into the corruption. And they know several members of the Biden family engaged in influence peddling, and while, again, Joe Biden was an elected official, which was pretty much his entire adult life, I think, until, like, when did he go to Senate, when he was, like, 27? So there's so much where they have James Biden, again, Joe Biden's older brother, who secretly negotiated a $140 million settlement deal in 2012 between a United States company and the Saudi Arabian government, because he was hired to do it because of his relationship with Joe Biden, who was vice president at the time, because of the Biden name. That is influence peddling. When you're using the name, the political name and the political legacy, and your excuse me, your older brother, your younger brother, rather, is the vice president of the United States. There's a reason for that, that the Saudi Arabian government would like to deal with the current American vice president's brother. Who knows what information was shared in this secret $140 million deal that was negotiated. I'd imagine they talked about a lot of things. And then we know, of course, the issues and the instances of Hunter Biden's influence peddling. Well, obviously they're all more well known. We've had whistleblowers, and Joe Biden has been directly involved in the family business. And of course, even though he says he hasn't, you know, we have the laptop from hell, emails that, you know, show proposed percentage distribution, 10% for the big guy, equity in a company for a joint venture. You have the China Energy Company involved. Hunter Biden's former business partner, Tony Bobulinski, involved, high-ranking members of the Chinese Communist Party, and all those emails back from like 2017. And again, that proposed business adventure was supposed to include the 10 held by H. Hunter for the big guy, which Tony Bobulinski confirmed the big guy was referenced to Joey Bag of Donuts. So, you know, Ukrainian business deals, the other email that was found on the laptop from hell. He joined a Ukrainian energy company, Burisma, 4 years before Joe Biden's, you know, when he bragged that he was going to force the firing of the prosecutor in, was it 2016, for investigating Burisma. So you're, you know, quid pro quo, you fire the guy, you're not getting the $1 billion, is looking into the energy company that happened now, that my son is sitting on the board, who has no energy company experience, by the way. Of course, his lack of experience, for that lack of experience, he was paid $83,000 a month by the energy company. You have no experience whatsoever. You hold the Biden name. You have the Biden influence. Your father is the vice president of the United States. And we're going to pay you handsomely $83,000 per month. And he flew on Air Force Two multiple occasions to make this deal. Like he literally flew on our tax dollars to make this these handsome deals for himself and his family. How is that not influence peddling? How is that wire fraud, mail fraud, fraud, a slew of things, bribery, lack of experience, $83,000 a month. There you go, energy company, no problem, no problem. So, and that was just weeks after, you know, Joe Biden was announced the point person on U.S. foreign policy towards Ukraine, the biggest money laundering place in the world. Ukraine is the biggest money laundromat in the world. Hence why we installed Zelensky in 2014 under Obama and all that good stuff. There is so much around this. The Oversight Committee has a big job ahead of them because they have to go head to head. They have to go head to head with Hunter Biden's attorneys. They have to go head to head, I'm sure, with all the bureaucracy that goes on within the corrupt government, because there will be so many people trying to block things, subpoenas, just legislative mumbo jumbo. And so we talked about this, actually, James and I, this whole Hunter Biden thing about now they're going on the offensive and they want to attack everybody who spoke about or had access to the information on Hunter Biden's laptop, from Rudy Giuliani to Roger Stone to John Paul Mac Isaacs, I had him on my show a while ago, the laptop repairman who had possession of the laptop, who tried calling Hunter numerous times to come get it, and he didn't, and Hunter signed the piece of paper that after a certain amount of time, it now becomes his property, and then that got the whole ball rolling. Excuse me, and that guy's living in hiding. So with all of that, now Hunter Biden's like, yeah, he acknowledged that the laptop was real and that the laptop was his after, of course, he gave multiple interviews that, no, I don't remember the laptop. Yeah, it could be. Could be the Russians, Russian disinformation. We all know that was all bullshit. Russia, Russia, Russia. And now they're going to play Hunter is the victim. He had a horrible childhood. He lost his brother. He had some sort of like an abusive childhood. He's a junkie. I mean, even AOC was coming out in defense of Hunter Biden because, you know, he has a substance abuse issue. Those vile animals on The View, you know, oh, Hunter, he's got his addictions and his demons and this. And Hunter Biden is the victim because his lawyers, who are smart, are concocting this whole offensive plan and go on this, you know, attack that they, I think, have in their head. This is just my speculating, assuming. I could be a complete moron for thinking this. But they know that the House Republicans, they have the House for the next 2 years, till 2024. Can they, with legal jargon and the justice system, because the wheels of justice, no matter if it's civil or criminal, move very, very, very slow, the whole court process. Can these high-paid, very good attorneys that Hunter has, the team of attorneys, can they delay it enough in the hopes that they have in their head, hey, let's delay this until the 2024 election in the hopes that they're banking on the Republicans losing the House in 2024, which is a good possibility. And if they do, well, those investigations go away just like the Democrats' January 6th investigations went away and they got to print a handsome book and a report about it. And then the same thing will happen because once the Democrats take the House back, all this Hunter Biden stuff is going to be, nope, no more. It's done. Finished. See you later. No one's going to be held accountable. Can they run out the clock to 2024 for those 2 years in reference to Hunter Biden, the laptop of hell? And any investigation from Comer and the House Oversight Committee in any investigations into the Biden crime family, can they do it? Is that, in fact, the goal? Run the clock. I'm not a sports fan. But you hear that term a lot, right? Run the clock. don't kick, go for the touchdown, whatever, run the clock, whatever. Could this be their play? Could this be Hunter Biden's lawyer's big offensive play? Make him a victim, try to get as many talking heads as possible to defend him as a victim, as a junkie. He's not a politician. He's not a, you know, elected position, nothing. And we can just run this through and then it'll be gone. And we can run home free, just like Hillary Clinton did with her emails and all the corruption there. Is it possible? You tell me. You tell me what you think is going to happen with Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, Joe Biden's brother, everyone in between. Will anyone be held accountable? Joe Biden is not going to jail. I will say that now. Joe Biden's not going to jail. He's not getting arrested. And I have serious, serious doubts that Hunter Biden will also. Unless there is something huge that happens and they can get Hunter Biden to flip, which some people think he might be cooperating already. I'm not convinced. I don't think anybody's going to jail, people. I really don't. But like James Curry says, my co-host all the time, the court of public opinion could be really more important than any real court proceedings or decisions or outcomes, which I tend to agree with him on that in this case. So tell me what you think. Tell me what you think on that. Is Joe Biden going to run for president in 2024? Is he going to run? Some people say yes. Some people say no. Some people say he's going to resign. Some people say he's going to be forced to resign. I don't think he's going to be forced to resign. The Democrats have to come up with a plan. But the establishment media, which is interesting, is questioning Joe Biden's 2024 viability, basically over age, the blunders when he's speaking and tired and not wanting to take questions or not just brain dead, just the brain mush, the dementia. But on Thursday, today, two establishment media outlets questioned whether Joe Biden would be viable to run for president of the United States due to his advanced age and his continuous blunders. Now, people will say, well, Donald Trump is old too, and he's running. There's a vast difference between a Donald Trump 75 years old, and he's still younger than Joe Biden, but not by a lot, to Joe Biden as 80. I mean, you see Joe Biden, and you see Donald Trump. He's out there playing golf. He's with it. He's witty. He's nonstop 24/7. The guy doesn't sleep. He lives on McDonald's and diet soda. I don't know how he's not dead. God bless him. But complete difference. And then, you know, you could have a very old 70-year-old, and then you can have a 70-year-old that's doing pull-ups in the gym. You know what I mean? Like, I know 70-year-old that can outdo me in certain things. It doesn't say much about me, but whatever. Fuck off. But anyway. And these were today, I believe. Yeah, today's Thursday. He went for the physical, and you know, everything's fine. He's healthy. He's with it. He can run. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. But there's rumors swirling that Joe Biden is going to launch a reelection campaign in April, which is not too far away. I think they're getting their ducks in a row and figuring out what's going on. And there are some media outlets that have taken the position that Joe Biden's age, his mental acuity, could impact his chances of beating whoever the GOP nominee is, which is going to be Donald Trump, by the way. Oh, really quick, I'm sure we'll talk about this tomorrow also. George Soros, Georgie Iflaps, made a comment about how pitiful Donald Trump is and that Ron DeSantis is a, you know, I think he said something, ruthless. You know, he was speaking like as if it wasn't, people are calling it an endorsement. I wouldn't call it an endorsement, but let's put it this way. He wasn't talking negatively about Ron DeSantis, and he said that Ron DeSantis would be most likely the 2024 GOP nominee. And the fact that if you go back and listen to the clip, that he wants him to be. Now, I don't know about you, and I don't hate Ron DeSantis. I'm not a Ron DeSantis hater. He has his place in politics. I just don't feel it's in the White House in 2024. If George Soros is saying that guy either is going to be or should be the GOP nominee, I'm going with the other guy. That's just me. whatever George Soros is saying that he thinks is going to happen or wants to happen, I'm going the opposite direction. Interpret that however you want. But you know, does Joe Biden have the mental acuity to run another presidential campaign? I'm going to say no, I don't think so. I do not think so. I mean, it is literally the White House is hiding this. They're downplaying this whole Joe Biden dilemma. It's a balancing act for them. Joe Biden is inaccessible to anybody. And we have KJP and Kirby. We have these two morons that are not transparent. And then we have the White House officials now choosing which reporters can't be in a briefing with him. And we know, I mean, listen, the guy did his first press conference and he was told what reporters to pick for questions. He was not allowed to just freeball it like Donald Trump, just doing freestyle questioning. Donald Trump would stay up there for an hour answering questions, just freestyling, like boom, 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 boom. Like a president should be doing. That's what a president should be doing. Not looking on a cue card. Yeah, I'm supposed to call on Steve Nelson from the New York Post over here. What do you got to say? Hey, come on, man. Get off my fucking lawn. Come on. I mean, I can't see it, but they're going to make Joe Biden look like a hero. You know, right now he's the oldest president in U.S. history at 80 years old, and he remains so if he won re-election, which, listen. This guy is not winning re-election in 2024. There is no way. The rigging and stealing that would have to take place would be monumental, like never been done before. And he would be 86 by the end of his second term. And again, there are people in the Democratic Party who privately are speaking and they're worried the party's just dismissing this dilemma of demented Joe. Like they're we know Joe Biden's age is one of the top issues. His mental acuity is even a bigger issue. I mean, if he was a sharp 80-year-old, they wouldn't be talking about this. The guy is not sharp from day one. He's shot. And of course, Joe Biden, he's going to push back on claims that he's too old, unhealthy. You know, back in October, he swore up and down that his mental ability and physical energy are perfectly fine. He's in good health. But you even have Democrat lawmakers that aren't fully agreeing. I mean, you have people that will not come out and say that they would endorse Joe Biden to run for re-election. A lot of Democrats, a lot of them. But they got him up there. This is what he's doing. And it's wild. And I like that the mainstream media, as much as I despise them and want them completely dismantled because they're liars and the propaganda arm of the progressive left, I do like that some of them are questioning his mental acuity and his age and if he can be a viable candidate. But of course, they're also figuring out with the Democratic Party, well, who it's going to be and who do they have to push? You know, who's going to run? Is Hillary going to run again? She had said she's not going to run, but if Joe Biden decides not to run, is she going to throw her hat in? Hillary Clinton will never be president of the United States. Never. Yeah. And he got his physical and he's in perfect health. So, you know, what do you got to say? Oh, we have Nikki Haley running for president. I'll touch on that for a minute. Before I touch on that, listen, you want to support the show and my company, conservative-owned business, and you know someone who loves cigars or you like cigars yourself, go over to mypatriotcigars.com. Use promo code CIGAR15 to save 15% off. They're great cigars straight out of Nicaragua. I spent a lot of time on these blends. There's four to choose from. There'll be more coming out. Mypatriotcigars.com, promo code CIGAR15 for 15% off. You get free shipping on orders over $100. You buy a box of cigars, you get a $10 e-gift card. There's gift cards on the website if you want to get one for a friend or a family member. Sampler packs, 5-packs, boxes, and they're really, really great cigars. I'm a daily smoker. I've been smoking cigars forever and worked very hard on it, like I said, mypatriotcigars.com. And yeah, try them out. If you don't like them, tell me. But I know you're going to love them. A lot of people out there are loving them. Rudy Giuliani loves him. Roger Stone's loving him. Elijah Schaefer from Blaze TV, as a matter of fact, hit me up on Twitter this morning and said that he loves them. So a lot of people like him. I'm sure you will too. So Nikki Haley, she's going to run for president. And it's like she's auditioning for the vice president spot. She knows she can't win. She knows. Literally, the day she announced, she got like, she couldn't even break 2,000 live views during her big presidential campaign announcement. I think 2,000 views on YouTube. Like, really? You're going to go up against heavy hitters like Donald Trump and even Ron DeSantis? Really, Nikki Haley, who's a warmonger? And she's literally said last year that if Donald, she would not run against her former boss, Donald Trump. And now she's going to run against her former boss. Former boss, Donald Trump. Yeah. And, you know, she's, I think, got under 1,000 subscribers on YouTube on her channel or whatever it is, and literally couldn't get 2,000 views for her to say that she's running for president of the United States because she wants change and she's a child of Indian immigrants. Nobody cares, Nikki. What are we going to call a sticky Nikki? I can't wait. I want to see what the nickname that Donald Trump always gives everybody a nickname. We'll see what he gives Nikki Haley, but bad move, bad move. Last thing I want to get into, because again, we got a big show tomorrow on those poor people in East Palestine, Ohio, which nothing is safe. I mean, the video clips are unbelievable with the rainbow sheens on the water when they throw something in and the ripples. Excuse me, Senator J.D. Vance from Ohio, newly elected, there showing the water and just the people speaking and the EPA not doing enough and nobody's doing enough and Pete Buttplug not doing anything, Joe Biden doing crap. We're going to get into all that tomorrow. So during the midterms cycle, John Fetterman ran for Senate in Pennsylvania against Dr. Oz. I need a drink. Hold on. Now, I'm not a fan of Dr. Oz. I think he's a phony. Did not want him to win the Republican primary, but he did. And at that time, it was about stacking chips. So, of course, my support was to get Dr. Oz in the Senate because I believe with his relationship with Donald Trump that he would actually legislate and vote getting nudged from Donald Trump and he would have that jump into line with America First. Some people disagree with me, but we needed him and not this uncooked turkey on legs, John Fetterman. Matter of fact, Jack Posobiec blocked me on Twitter because of this, because after the primary, on his Twitter page with, I think he has a couple million followers, was going after Dr. Oz about his Jersey mansion and everything else after he won the primary. And I basically called him out on his Twitter and said, you know, what side are you on? Are you trying to get retarded Shrek elected in Pennsylvania with your following? You know, what are you doing? And apparently he didn't like it. People were responding to it and he blocked me. Still has me blocked, Jack Posobiec. And we have a lot of mutual contacts back. I was like, Jay, I don't know, whatever. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. Anyway, that doesn't matter. John Fetterman was just in the hospital. I thought maybe he was having a second stroke. This guy completely, he's worse than Joe Biden, and he's a lot younger when it comes to just his cognitive decline from the stroke. Feel bad for him. He had a stroke. I don't care about him as a person. He's a commie, crime-loving, gun-grabbing moron. He's a piece of garbage. They ruled out a stroke, got out of the hospital, and then all of a sudden, just days after being hospitalized for feeling lightheaded, brand new senator checked himself into the hospital to receive treatment for clinical depression. That's what his chief of staff says. Pennsylvania, you've been duped. You've been played. And you gave up the seat to the Democratic Party, both the Senate and the governorship, because now the governor, when this guy is not staying, John Fetterman is not staying a senator. He's not going to do his full term. He's not doing 6 years as a senator. He's going to resign. That seat belongs to the Democrats now. And that little Democrat commie weasel Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, will be able to appoint anybody he wants until whether it's a special election or to finish out the term. Hey, it could be John Fetterman's wife, the commie that's now an American citizen. You never know. That could happen. So clinical depression, what is he depressed about? He won an election. Campaigns are hard. You got the world by the balls. You're a United States senator. That's what you wanted. And now you went from being lightheaded to clinically depressed after the stroke that you had. And his chief of staff made a statement. I'm going to read it quick. Last night, Senator John Fetterman checked himself into Walter Reed National Military Medical Center to receive treatment for clinical depression. While John has experienced depression off and on throughout his life, it only became severe in recent weeks. On Monday, John was evaluated by Dr. Brian P. Monahan. Monahan recommended inpatient care at Walter Reed. John agreed, and he is receiving treatment on a voluntary basis. After examining John, the doctors at Walter Reed told us that John is getting the care he needs. When a doctor tells you that you should go inpatient because you might have some screws loose mentally, but you're clinically you're that depressed where they want you inpatient, not just say, here, take a Lexapro and you'll be fine. I've been down that road. I've been down that road. And if they're telling you you need to go inpatient because of depression, that's a big problem. Pennsylvania, you have a senator that cannot legislate. Basically, without saying it, he is voluntarily receiving treatment in a mental ward of Walter Reed Medical Center. So you elected retarded Shrek, who unfortunately has this issue with depression, and Pennsylvania is now your United States Senator. But you guys care about George Santos lying about where he went to school. Yeah. Please. Matter of fact, I was talking to George Santos today via text message. I talk to George. I support him as a congressman. I live near, you know, where he serves. And he's not resigning. And I'm encouraging him definitely not to resign. I'm hoping maybe to have him on the show with me in the next couple weeks to talk about actual things going on in the country, not about lying where he went to school and worked and all that other bullshit that I don't really care about, but actually maybe even blast the Nassau County GOP, where I am, the Republican Party here, on what absolute moron, ridiculous, nefarious establishment cucks that they truly are. And what George Santos wants to do as far as legislating for his district, which I am more concerned about. I want to know what he's got going on. So I'm trying to make that happen. And I think he's also going to make an appearance on Steak for Breakfast, which I'm on occasionally, filling in and things like that. Yeah. So with that, tomorrow we have again going to do a big show on East Palestine, Ohio, about all, I mean, there's so much stuff to talk about there. It's wild, but, again, I always appreciate you all tuning in and the support you guys give. Follow me over on Twitter. I've been the most active on Twitter because my page has been exploding there. Really, thanks for everyone that's been hitting the follow button over there. But Alan Jacoby 1776 over on Twitter, at Alan Jacoby 1776 on Twitter, at Alan Jacoby 1776 on Getter. And subscribe to the Rumble page. Follow the Rumble page. Make an account. This way you can get in the live chats and share your points and ask questions. I see all the live chats, so don't be scared. Throw a question in. Tell me I'm a moron. Send me, you know, love letters, hate letters, whatever. I like them all. It doesn't bother me. But the Rumble page, you can get to it by just easy going to 1776live.tv. It'll take you right there. But yeah, tomorrow, 8:30 p.m. Eastern with James Curry for Freedom Friday. We're going to get into East Palestine, Ohio. I don't know what else James has in store for us. He's always got some cool stuff pulling out of his hat of tricks. But yeah, I'll enjoy the rest of your night, and I will see you tomorrow for Freedom Friday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. So we'll see you soon.